This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Dave Herndon. He's editor-in-chief of New Mexico Magazine. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So the new issue, the January issue, is basically about all these things that are going on in New Mexico, all of these movements. They're sort of bubbling up from below, business and arts and sciences and things like that. The issue is called What's Next? What's going on? How did you conceive of this kind of overview of these movements in New Mexico?
Well, I was contacted by an accelerator called ABQID. They came by my office November of 2014 or something to tell me what they were doing in Albuquerque about trying to cultivate startup businesses. And, you know, I thought it was all really interesting. And I've always thought that New Mexico Magazine really had an economic development component to it. When we write about the lifestyle and the assets of the state, you know, I think we're providing economic development tools and fodder and identifying people who are having a good lifestyle and who are succeeding here and singing the praises of, you know, what can happen in New Mexico. So, but I didn't really have a vision of like how I could take what a business incubator was doing and translate it to the pages of a magazine. But then a month or two later, they held an event at Taos Ski Valley called the ABQID Ski Lift Pitch Contest. This was like the elevator pitch taken to the ski lift of Taos, and they invited venture capitalists from other states and business leaders from other states and from within New Mexico to go skiing with people who have startup ideas and to pitch them their business plan. And then they...
While skiing?
While on the lift instead of on the elevator.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a great idea. And then they judged the pitches, and then they awarded a $10,000 cash prize. And, you know, there was a lot of really great ideas for a lot of really smart people doing a lot of different kinds of things that were pitching there. Among the finalists were like a lot of tech guys that were coming up with algorithms to solve problems that I didn't even know existed and make, you know, nanotech and biotech and all that kind of stuff that really wouldn't be appropriate matter for New Mexico Magazine to cover. But the winners of that contest were Taos Mountain Energy Bars and two guys that were former ski bums at Taos who, you know, at the end of the season said, what do we do now? And this is about 5 years ago, and they developed, you know, sort of a better cliff bar kind of thing. And they started taking it to market, and they made it in a community kitchen, and they started to get some port and selling it out of the back of their car and taking it around down here to Santa Fe, etc. So the aha moment for me there was that this was a nexus, a sweet spot that joined the natural assets of New Mexico, Taos Mountain, the recreational asset and the travel asset that the resort represents, the ethos of the mountain that these guys were living the life, and then they translated it into, you know, a product that had that expressed all that. So then I saw that how this ecosystem can work, sort of connecting all of those dots. And then once I saw that, I saw it at work in a lot of different places. And so this issue is kind of packed with stories about people who are doing things, taking the DIY ethos, and then find one of the new things that's happening is that there is a support community of incubators, and the educational institutions and the civic institutions and the governmental institutions that are trying to encourage economic development, especially for maybe younger adults or for startups or for independent entrepreneurs. There's now an infrastructure to support people who have an idea, who have a product, who might not have any idea how to make a business plan or to find investors. But there is, you know, that support system now in sort of here, you know, kind of throughout the state.
So we're really talking about all over the state, not just Albuquerque, not just Santa Fe. What are some of the more far-flung places that you went and that you were seeing?
Well, we reached out to the Arrowhead Center, which is an incubator at NMSU, and they have several projects that they have cultivated, including a student-run cafe where they make some products that, you know, you can buy to make muffins or cookies or something out of. They have also, in Silver City, there's, we're talking about maker culture and maker spaces too, which is all kind of holistically part of all this. The DIY ethos has become expanded to the DIWO ethos, which is do it with others. So that's the beauty of the maker culture, where they'll have maker spaces where people that wouldn't have the resources in a studio to have a 3D printer or a laser cutter or something, you know, can go, or they can have tools and instruction, you know, in workshop settings. So there's a great art space in Silver City that's very far out, like Art Garage, where you can just go in and you know, be given the tools and some instruction to make your own thing. We found a story about a woman who's bought a one-ton animating animation camera that was on the East Coast, and she brought it back all the way.
That was an amazing story. Right, this wonderful artist and this huge machine that does, and of course in a magazine you can't quite show what this animation looks like, but it's sort of magical.
Right. Well, apparently that machine or one like it was actually used to make the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So it's probably a little bit antiquated as far as industry standard goes, but it's still a pretty capable machine. That story was emblematic, again, of an individual who had a vision and an agenda, but got support from the NMSU incubator, and they got some support from one of the labs who helped to reprogram the thing when they got it here. And she does workshops for the kids from the local college in Silver City, Western New Mexico College there. So it brought, again, it was another example of how an individual artist utilized a support network to do, you know, a really kind of quixotic thing of bringing this huge thing to a commune that she lives on, you know, near Silver City. It's crazy.
This whole world of quote unquote maker culture, maker spaces is interesting because it has not only a kind of art element, but a techno nerd element to it, or that's how it seems.
That's exactly right. And one of the people who is kind of most responsible for that is a New Mexican, Jared Tarbell, who is one of the founders of Etsy. And there's nothing more foundational to maker culture than Etsy, because it connected the global village of cottage industry people and gave them a way to, you know, connect with the clientele in non-traditional retail way. So you have literally one of the founders of this kind of maker culture is a New Mexican, and he lives in Albuquerque, and he's invested in Meow Wolf, and he's committed to sort of the revival of downtown Albuquerque. And we use him as the sort of the focal point, the way into a story about the revival of downtown Albuquerque, where this is also this kind of this cult startup culture is flourishing, starting to flourish.
Talk more about the revival of downtown Albuquerque. Somewhere in your magazine, it says that Albuquerque was named as one of the secretly cool cities in the United States, or something like that.
Yeah, it was. It was in Huffington Post, I think. It was a listicle of what you said, secretly cool places, and Albuquerque was, you know, in the top five or something. It's also, you know, there was a Census Bureau report that came out recently, which said that it was had the fourth highest rate of startups in 2013 and 2014. So there is some perception, and there's some evidence to support that Albuquerque has the potential to flourish, you know, as a bigger and better startup hotbed. One of the sources that we interviewed from ABQID recently moved here from New York. She had gone to UNM, gone to New York, came back, and I asked her why. What do you tell, you know, your friends back in New York, why you moved back to Albuquerque, and she said, this is, you know, the place to be. It's the land of opportunity. It's poised for, you know, has the potential to develop the way that sort of Austin or Boulder did 10, 15 years ago as a tech startup hotbed.
It's so interesting to hear this and to kind of contemplate New Mexico through the lens of being a hotbed of entrepreneurial activity, given that we're 50th out of 50 states in new job creation. I mean, that's, you know, we're not actually in reality right now doing that well.
Right. So this is kind of the silver lining department. You know, there are some positive indicators that could be antidote to some of the negative indicators that we are so familiar with, and there's such a constant drumbeat of bad news. But there is some good news out there, and there is some potential, and there's some hope, and there's some people that are really succeeding. There's one of the businesses that was affiliated with ABQID. It's called Urban Fresh, and they're like spa and skincare products, and they made the list of the 500 fastest growing companies in the U.S. From one of the business magazines. And, you know, another success story, they utilize essential oils that they get from a Santa Fe company. So, you know, there are assets and there are good things happening here. And there is a chance for more things to flourish. You know, there is one economic development model that says it's all about attracting businesses to relocate here. And, you know, that's got to happen. But there's another economic development movement that says we need to cultivate, you know, local talent and local assets and nourish them with local venture capital.
I mean, and the thing about that is that you are keeping money in state. If you have out-of-state corporations that locate a manufacturing facility here, basically their profits go elsewhere.
Yeah, that's true. And so, you know, all these things have to happen, but I think it's encouraging, promising, and hopeful that this is happening here now. And it feels like very New Mexican to me because this is kind of grassroots. Some of the people that we're identifying, you know, that, you know, have cottage industries, you know, are very local products. It's vegetables that are grown here, that are pickled here and sold in Whole Foods here. And craft, you know, sort of the craftsman level. We also identify a bunch of art workshops around this state. And some of them are, you know, traditional pottery and tinsmithing and all that stuff. You know, there's a great tradition of independent production here. But now it seems that there are more opportunities to bring it to market, like I said before. Help you get a business plan, help you find investors, help you figure out what marketing is all about.
And some of the marketing would actually allow us to ship stuff out of state.
Right. So the Taos Mountain Energy Bar guys are in 1,500 locations now. You know, they've in 5 years, they've gone to like a $5 million business. And they're sold regionally. And even there are other examples. Who's Donuts is being picked up by Whole Foods regionally. And as fast as they can make their donuts, they will have markets that are not necessarily, you know, in New Mexico. So it's, you know, that's great for economic development in the state.
We're talking to Dave Herndon of New Mexico Magazine. Now let's talk more specifically about food culture. I mean, you've talked about energy bars and donuts, and there's a whole lot going on in terms of both food and drink, including right here in Santa Fe.
Right. Again, it's another one of those assets that we have here that is having an opportunity to flourish because of, again, there's a national trend for the local, the artisanal, the crafted, and everything. Those kinds of businesses have always been in New Mexico. We're a do-it-yourself kind of state in a lot of ways. But yeah, so people, you know, the Barry O'Brienery is an example of a civil servant who, for his second career, got in on the pickling trend, and they're great pickles. And
they are, ladies and gentlemen, great pickles.
You know, we mentioned Who's Donuts. You know, it's a huge success story, poised for greater success. There's a Rebel Donuts in Albuquerque, and there's Chocolatiers around, and then now there's a, you know, the other thing that's happening in food culture is going from the food truck pop-up to bricks and mortar to spin-off business. So there's Examples like Dr. Feelgood's is a great example. Goes from his truck to his restaurant to his bakery, butchery, lunch counter. And who knows what's next. Paper Dosa did the same, a similar thing. Goes from pop-ups, wins the local BizMix contest to get funding and support. Now they have, you know, a fantastic Indian restaurant in Santa Fe. So there is there's example after example of people who are, you know, have an idea, have a product, and are now have a ladder to make it flourish.
Talk more about the food truck movement. Is that like a warm weather thing? I mean, you get your food, where are you supposed to eat it?
I guess you could, you know, it's just a takeout at that point if it's really cold, unless they have the space heaters. I don't know. I do know that, you know, there are lots of them in Albuquerque, and there are more. It seems like there are more and more of them in Santa Fe.
But it's like a takeout. It's like a mobile takeout thing.
Well, some of them have stationary locations, like Bang Bite, what used to be the parking lot on Old Santa Fe Trail in Paseo, but now it's over at the Luna. But, you know, they can be mobile or they can be stationary.
Now, another part of the whole movement is microbreweries.
Yes. Brew culture is a huge part of, again, this startup. We have a product, we have an idea, it goes along with a lifestyle, it becomes a local urban amenity, and it's something, you know, that we've been lacking in sort of younger adult culture in opportunities in Santa Fe and probably to a lesser extent in Albuquerque. But brew culture really provides great products. The New Mexico beers kill it at the Great American Beer Festival every year. And then it creates it's a great subculture, and it provides places where all the pub culture assets of having a community there, food truck comes and parks outside. Now you have a brew pub and you don't need to have a kitchen in order for people to get food there. Now you have two businesses that are flourishing in symbiosis. And there's a perception that it's still a growth industry because of the success that has been had so far by the, you know, some of the top breweries and some of the smaller ones, that, you know, there's potential for growth there. And again, it's another product that can take brand New Mexico outside of New Mexico.
Right, right. When I look at all the different things that you're talking about, one of the things that it says to me is that there is a tremendous hunger for real things. In other words, instead of kind of like mass-produced, low-quality American corporate monoculture beer, let's say,
right,
or whatever, or cosmetics, whatever it,
yes,
whatever it is we're talking about, energy bars, we can get something that is much more handcrafted and really higher quality and has a feel of the place that we're living in.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, the national trends for the local, the artisanal, the handcrafted, the authentic. These are all attributes of the kinds of products that New Mexico has always produced. When other towns or in other states have to provide seed money to create local farms for people, to provide local farm-to-table fare, New Mexico already has lots of mom and pop farms. You know, that is the scale of farming here now, you know, more than big agribusiness. So New Mexico is interestingly positioned to sort of get the benefit of national trends, millennial trends, by leveraging some of our, you know, local assets.
It's interesting when we talk about the whole idea of attracting young people to New Mexico, attracting young people to Santa Fe, trying to keep young people from leaving this place, which a lot of people have left and some come back, many don't. And the things you're talking about provide really the necessities of what we might call lifestyle. I mean, you need a nightlife and so on.
Right.
You need the food, the fun,
absolutely,
the creativity. The question that always comes up over and over again is the jobs. These things are providing the resources and the lifestyle for young people. Are they also providing a level of jobs to keep those people right here? Do you have a sense of that?
You know, I don't know if it's reaching, you know, a sustainable level, but we've identified some examples of businesses that are doing that, like the Taos Mountain Energy Bar guys. They got a grant from the state for something like $450,000 to open a new production facility in Cuesta. Cuesta needs jobs. The mines got shut down. And so they're, you know, now they're able to employ maybe 20 people or something. And guess what? Those two guys stay here too, you know, and they have a vision for, you know, beyond energy bars, maybe getting into a line of mountain gear and, you know, other related lifestyle stuff. So that has potential for growth and potential to attract more like-minded people or keep more of them, provide a living so they don't have to leave Taos. You know, Meow Wolf is employing, you know, something like 60, 80 people right now. And those are young, you know, by and large, young creatives, the kind of people, you know, that you're talking about that we need to attract and retain and provide, you know, an opportunity to make a living. But then that has knock-on effect. You know, the Siler district is going to become, you know, a go-to destination instead of a kind of a warehouse industrial light industry district, you know, and Dual Brewing is already there. And the same can be said of the Lower Rail Yard. And there's just more of a pulse. There's more choices now. The Loyal Hound and Fire and Ice and Radish and Rye, gastropubs, they didn't exist here a couple years ago. There are Santa Fe articles called Neo Santa Fe, and it's talking about this dispersion of different kinds of urban amenities that are springing up around town. The center of gravity is not necessarily downtown Canyon Road, traditional Santa Fe anymore. That is a great asset. It's a historic asset, and it's not going to go away, thank God. But there are other alternatives and more opportunities that create chances for jobs, more choices for those of us who live here, and more choices for, you know, the visitor experience.
Meow Wolf, ladies and gentlemen, for the maybe four people in the audience who haven't heard of them, is a really amazing arts group that started in Santa Fe about probably eight or nine years ago, and has basically taken over the old bowling alley on Rufina Circle and is making an extraordinary installation that opens in March of this year. So we will have more about that coming up in the future.
I think that Meow Wolf has is poised to, you know, attract a different kind of attention to Santa Fe. It's going to be an original attraction. I don't think there's anything like it. And so I think that it will get a lot of national press and international attention when that happens. And then Santa Fe will be seen in a new light. You know, the cover line that I threw on there is 21st century Santa Fe. You know, the oldest state capital is pivoting to the 21st century right now.
And it's always hard to define the time you're living in when you're living in it. Like 10, 15, 20 years from now, we will look back on this time and see perhaps in this issue the seeds of what this state has become. But as you have talked about, it's very much a kind of synergy between the high-tech moment that we're living in and the real grassroots, handcrafted, earthy New Mexico.
Right. And, you know, and it just makes an organic kind of sense for New Mexico, for this level of development to be happening.
We're talking to Dave Herndon of New Mexico Magazine. Another piece of this perhaps little renaissance in New Mexico and in Santa Fe is the idea of nightlife. And it's interesting to see how nightlife has evolved and changed in Santa Fe. I came here over 20 years ago, and there was a pretty nice nightlife and all kinds of clubs and things. And as the city got older and a lot of real estate was bought by people who wanted to retire here, I swear the city rolls up its sidewalks at 9 o'clock is what it feels like. And it's really hard to find a place to eat after, I mean, kitchens close at 9. I've been to places where kitchens close at 8:30, which is just enraging. There's a movement now to really keep Santa Fe open longer, and not just for millennials and young people, but there's a lot of people who do want to eat out after 9 o'clock. They go to the movies, they go to an event, and they want to eat.
Right.
They want to drink. They want to hang out. What's it looking like? What's happening?
I think there are, you know, there are more choices coming online. I think that the mayor's office has a task force and that's devoted to trying to cultivate more opportunity, more options, you know, more things to do at night. The fact that the Skylight opened is a great sign. We need it. We need a nightclub, and it's a multi-use nightclub that is not one thing. It can be, one night I went there and I saw the Specials or something, and there was a bunch of middle-aged people dancing to early 80s new wave ska. And then, you know, I came back a couple of hours later and it was a dance club with a completely different clientele. That's a kind of a big city thing, right? We need more of that. We need both of those things. We need a place where middle-aged people can dance and be home by 10, and a place for young people to go, you know, dancing until 2. So that's happening, and I hope it flourishes and succeeds. It's a great sign of life. You know, the Neo Santa Fe article, we opened with a spread of the a picture taken on the outside of the Violet Crown. You know, a simple, like a multi-use movie theater that has, you know, great craft beers on tap and better than average, you know, movie theater food and state-of-the-art facilities, and show everything from sort of indie and arty and foreign to blockbuster, to create more of an urban center, you know, around the rail yard. That's a positive development.
Not that we had a lack of independent movie theaters before that, Lord knows.
That's true. And I think that's another great asset of Santa Fe. I wonder if it's well known enough that Santa Fe is, you know, a great indie movie town. You know, the independent film festival had like 10,000 people come to it this year, and it's only in its sixth year. I mean, it's a thing. It's another example of culture, interesting culture that is kind of flourishing here.
Well, and the CCA, the Screen, and the Jean Cocteau playing the best movies anywhere, which is such a loss in the rest of the United States in places where there's only multiplexes.
I know. It's a great thing. And so, you know, there are real positive signs of life here, things that have a pulse. And, you know, is it going to result in great success in the 21st century? Is it going to evolve into a socioeconomic ecosystem that can support a lot more people or raise the general standard of living? Time will only tell. But, you know, at this stage, we're identifying some positive indicators.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate question is the one you just named, which is, you've got the lifestyle, do you have the jobs, do you have the housing, do you have enough to attract people to stay here? And we will see, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Well, you stayed here, right? You came to college here and grad school and stayed. And, you know, I know other people. A good friend of mine, Nate Downey, came to St. John's and stayed here and is a great member of the community and practicing sustainable gardening and, you know, is an advocate for, you know, water use. And so people that do come here for one reason or another, young people, some of them do find a good reason to stay and a good reason and a good way to be productive members of the community like yourself. I mean, you wrote a great article for us, I don't know, a year and a half ago or something, about Santa Fe as an intellectual hub, an underappreciated aspect of, you know, what we have to offer here and what the, you know, the ethos is like here. I mean, the cover line I put on that story was College Town for Boomers. So we'll see if Santa Fe can become, get a little bit younger too.
Yeah. So let's talk about New Mexico Magazine. This New Mexico Magazine is found in every hotel and lots of other places in the state where visitors come. It's a branch of the Department of Tourism, and it's been around for a long time.
It was established in 1923 as the New Mexico Highway Journal, which made it, you know, makes it the oldest state magazine in the U.S.
Do you still have those old issues?
They are. Yeah, we have. We do. You know, it's a real legacy title. You know, a lot of great writers and artists over the decades have contributed to the magazine. And as you said, it's an aspect of the tourism department. So the core mission is to, you know, shine a light on the state's best assets for visitors and to promote in-state travel and access to the recreational assets and the natural assets and just advocate for moving around the state and appreciating it for what it is. And we are boosterish. We do show it in an attractive light, but we are very conscious not to be hypey about it and say things that aren't true or would be misleading and then destroy your integrity.
Right, right. Now, how is tourism doing? I mean, it goes in waves. I remember a time when Santa Fe was just trendy all over the United States,
right,
and then it sort of wasn't anymore. What kind of movements of tourists do you see coming to the state, sort of coming and going over the years?
Yeah, so the tourism department has been successful over the last several years establishing, you know, a return on investment that the legislature grants a greater marketing budget to the tourism department based on year over year improvements in visitation and overnight stays and spending, etc. So it's considered a growth industry here. There's considered more potential here. One of the top travel sites or magazines recently said it was like one of the highest value vacation destinations in the United States. And the millennial appetite for the authentic and the original experience and the non-cookie cutter travel experience, this is what New Mexico has to offer. And this is what the tourism department is trying to latch onto, you know, with the slogan New Mexico True. We're saying that this is an authentic destination where you can have authentic, original experiences.
What kind of changes have we seen in the demographics of visitors to New Mexico? Do we have a lot of people from other countries? Are those countries changing?
New Mexico is a very attractive destination to Europeans. I have French in-laws who are actually investing in New Mexico and opening a gallery in Las Vegas not because I'm here, because they love the Southwest and they see opportunity here in a town like Las Vegas, New Mexico, buying a historic building, renovating it, putting a contemporary art gallery in there that will has nothing to do with northern New Mexican traditional arts. So, you know, that's anecdotal, but everywhere you go, if you look at the guest books in places, you always see it's like all Europeans, Germans love New Mexico. The most published and read Western writer in the history of the world was a German author.
I know.
I mean,
Carl May, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, more books sold than Zane Grey and Louis L'Amour put together. But so there is this.
And he'd never been here.
Right. So, you know, the state has a lot of appeal. And I think, you know, we hope that there's a lot of potential for growth and more opportunity to attract a different kind of traveler. Just to circle back around to Meow Wolf, it's going to get a different kind of traveler than Santa Fe traditionally has. It's going to get the Instagram set that are bragging about this cool thing they're at before you are, you know, and try to create that fear of missing out among their followers. You know, so there's a chance for New Mexico to be cool again in the way, or Santa Fe in the way you said it had its moment. It used to have more cachet than it does now. You know, maybe it can regain some of that.
What about the really traditional tourist areas? I mean, in Santa Fe, we talk about Canyon Road and the Plaza and things like that. Are they struggling? Are they doing okay?
The art markets, like Indian Market and Spanish Colonial Market, and, you know, those are big...
Folk art market.
Folk art market, of course. You know, those are big deals. I mean, they attract a lot of people that spend a lot of money, and they've become institutions. And so they're sort of very foundational. Those are the reasons that Santa Fe, you know, is ranked among the top, handful of art markets in the country, with a population of 70,000, and it's like New York, Los Angeles, Santa Fe, you know, for art sales. I think it's probably, you know, has a lot to do with the markets, but it has a lot to do with the perennial galleries and everything else that we have here. So, you know, as for the pulse of Canyon Road, I can't really speak to that, but hope they're doing well.
Dave Herndon, how did you end up in New Mexico? How did you end up doing this work at New Mexico Magazine?
I used to be the editor of a magazine called Caribbean Travel and Life that suffered the consequences of the recession on Caribbean travel. So at some point around 2010, I found myself job hunting, and I had spent my life and career in New York and Washington, and but I didn't want to go back to the Northeast, a big city life, because I had two young sons. So I did a sort of a, I have friends here, and I came out and I did sort of a self-retreat, and thought about where I want to go and what are the attributes I want in a place I live and what kind of work do I want to do and how do I want my kids to grow up. And Santa Fe was tops on my list. And I was fortunate to find out that there was an opportunity to take over New Mexico Magazine. And so here I am.
And so you were, it wasn't just that you were job hunting, but you really were attracted to New Mexico and to Santa Fe in the first place.
Absolutely. It was, you know, as a result of this whole sort of process I did, even with the help of a coach, it was, you know, Santa Fe had the attributes that I was looking for, you know, all those top five most important things that, you know, I wanted, you know, in our lifestyle and work style.
What are those things for you? I mean, we've been talking about millennial people. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about tourists. As a person from the Northeast, from much bigger urban centers, what holds you here?
Well, I mean, I like the combination of, like everybody else, the outdoors assets that we have. I mean, I love to snowboard, and my wife loves hiking, and I want to take, you know, our boys away from their screens and every chance I get. And there's not a mall culture here for them to even gravitate towards if they were so inclined. We don't have, you know, that's not, we used to live in Orlando, and it was Orlando. We didn't have the, you know, the great outdoors except for the beach, which was fantastic. But you want to be in an environment that has the cultural sophistication that Santa Fe has. The people here are fascinating. It's off the charts, interesting people that you meet all the time. And, you know, it's the ease of small town living in a beautiful environment. We don't have, I'm kind of horrified by the 20th, 21st century style of urban architecture where everything's a glass skin building. I hate it. I find it very alienating. If I go to Union Square in New York, where I used to sort of be the center of my universe, I just find it appallingly ugly. And so to come to a place where there's, you know, this kind of architecture and access to the landscape that we have, I find it very soul satisfying.
There is that kind of tension. I mean, you talked a moment ago between the people who are in this Instagram culture where they want to be the first ones to post something. And on the other hand, what's so attractive about being here is that it is a place where you can slow down and not be attached to your devices.
Right. And someplace you can't even get coverage on your device. So
we know this, ladies and gentlemen, we do. So New Mexico Magazine is not only available all over the city and all over the state, but it's also on the web at
nmmagazine.com. And because we're so excited about this January issue, we are giving away free digital issues of it. So if you go to nmmagazine.com on the homepage, you'll find one or two opportunities to click on to what's called the DigiMag, digital magazine issue of the January issue of New Mexico Magazine. And, you know, we hope that it's interesting and inspire you to click onto the other buttons on the web page that say subscribe. And
do you have a lot of subscribers in state? Do you have a lot of subscribers out of state?
We have a little over half of our subscribers are out of state.
Is that right?
That's right. So people that moved away, a lot of people who live here also give it as a give subscriptions as a gift. But we have, you know, it's national and international readership. We also have a really robust Facebook page. We have nearly 100,000 people are following us on Facebook. We have a circulation of 92,000, a readership of 250,000. So we have a pretty big audience, and we have a great community, you know, developing around it. Our Facebook page is full of New Mexico love.
Dave Herndon is editor-in-chief of New Mexico Magazine. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me, Mayor Charlotte.
And once again, nmmagazine.com. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.